can do that.
All right, cool. What are the vibes?
You know, we're just here. First podcast episode. So excited.
I just saw the August Alsina.
Oh my God. You know, I actually listened to it. I listened to the track. It was interesting. Like, a lot, you know, it had mixed reviews on social media. A lot of people kept saying it was a bop. A lot of people said that it wasn't. Yeah. I don't know how I feel yet, because I listened to it twice and I still don't know how I feel. Because, like, he came out the jump and he gave the definition of anything. He came out the jump.
What would you do if, like, if he was, like, your, like, brother or, like, cousin or somebody or something like that? How would you help him?
I mean, obviously, like, he's really, really hurt about it, but yeah. I just wouldn't know what to do. And it brings up a whole, I didn't watch the Red Table Talk, because a lot of what she says on there, like, some stuff she says is very meaningful, but some of it is just, like, really big fancy words, and she's not saying a whole bunch of anything. But you could just tell, like, he was really, really hurt by it, and she seemed a little manipulative. Like, she was, like, manipulating what he was saying, and, like, Will even had to correct her on some stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know if I would have come public. I don't know if I would have encouraged him to be public about it, because I don't know if that really helped him heal. But, you know.
I already tried that. I tried to see if I could get an entanglement bar off or lie off with Portia, and she was like, no. It was Swift. Swift.
Portia not playing that at all.
So, all right, cool. So this is episode one of the Pause for the Cause podcast. My name is Curtis, and then my sweet sister friend, the person I'm gonna be when I grow up, is Leah. This is the first episode. This is where the rubber meets the road, and where we're going to bring blackness, young Mississippi blackness to the pod waves and talk about everything that motivates us, but also things that we believe that you should take some pause and really reflect on as it relates to causes. You'll find out pretty quickly with Leah and I that we believe in buzzword social justice and everything that comes with that. So, Leah, why don't you introduce yourself and just tell everybody who you are? Let them know, you know, about you.
I am Leah Davis, born and raised in Tupelo, Mississippi. I am a Southern Black woman. I care a lot about social justice issues, but I really care more about community engagement, so community organizing. What else? What else to say?
You just graduated.
Yeah, I just graduated from college. I just finished my undergrad degree, so now I'm trying to figure out next steps.
We're not doing that. So how did you graduate? Talk your
So you want me to brag? Oh my Lord. I finished at the University of Mississippi, graduated from the Honors College, did a whole thesis. So I really care about Black people. I really care about marginalized Black people. So my thesis was on queer, Black, LGBTQ youth and how they handle their spirituality and their sexuality. I fight against Confederate iconography. I believe that Mississippi has a huge, deep tie and a weird relationship to the Civil War. So I've been engaged in educating people about those topics and really trying to empower others to fight against those symbols. I did a lot of all this. Was definitely I did a lot. I did all the things. I did all the things. Had a great experience, and that will probably come up in the podcast too. Curtis and I are both University of Mississippi alums, so our experiences there.
Yeah. I mean, with everything you're saying, you make it sound like your jersey was like hung in the rafters and you were like, you're trying in the university. Like, that's crazy.
You know, I mean, it's more like, I don't know if I can ever, I love the University of Mississippi so much. It's such a special place. I love Oxford. But it's also, it's a very like interesting place for Black people, especially if you're someone who tries to stay engaged and someone who tries to like care about things. So I don't know if I will ever stop being in a relationship in an entanglement with the University of Mississippi. I mean, because I think, you know, it's, there's always bound to be something to happen at the university, and I always try to be engaged and try to care. So right now I'm a little trying to distance myself, but I'm pretty sure another so often I will be upset about something else and want to give my opinion towards something else.
You're being modest right now, and everyone listening, they're like, oh, that's so great. Yeah, she's the member of the Hall of Fame. She, you have to say what else.
I was very involved in different student orgs. I worked a lot in ASB, our student government. I worked a lot in the Black Student Union. I graduated from the Honors College. I worked a lot with the Division of Diversity. I was an orientation leader, Apex leader. So I tried to work in all different facets. I worked in admissions. I worked in the academic side. I worked in the student affairs side. That's where I met a lot of my friends, or I learned a lot of my people. Had great experiences. Learned a whole lot. Very interesting 4 years, most definitely. And so, obviously, they were good 4 years. My sister is attending UM in a few weeks. We're still trying to figure out if she's going to go back on campus or not. So, interesting.
It's a very accomplished career. I'm excited for you. I have pride. I'm biased in all of those things. What's your age range? You don't have to put your age out there. But I want people to know who you are and about your identity and where you are, like, in the world. Like, what's your...
I am under 25. So, definitely still young. But, I mean, I think, you know, I am a, you know, heterosexual, cisgender female. But I'm still, like, grappling with a lot of things about, you know, what does that mean in my relationship to society and to other people and to systems. I have a huge religious background. My parents are ministers. So that really plays into a lot of the decisions that I make. And, you know, I'm constantly reexamining myself and how are some of the things that I taught that were harmful. How does that affect the way that I move throughout the world today? The older I get, the more I realize that, like, life is so nuanced and there's no single plane thing.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, now it's time to brag on you because Curtis Davis has a whole PhD out here.
I want to ask you what does cisgender mean? And I ask because there are going to be some people who are locked up who are probably going to listen to this. My grandma going to listen to this. She don't know what that shit is. What is that?
So cisgender mainly means that you identify with the gender that you were assigned at birth. So I was assigned a woman at birth. And so that's what I identify as.
Yeah. That's the vibe for the whole podcast, y'all. We're going to talk about things. I mean, we know our stuff, and we are going to talk about everything that comes with being young, Black, and being educated. It's going to be a good mix. And, you know, I always want to make sure that we get some education there as well. Part of that is because I believe that learning is a great experience, but also too, I am an educator. I am a professor at
whole professor.
Whole professor. That is so interesting. So I'm Curtis or Lil Uzi Kurt or Skirtis or NBA old man. Either one of those names. So I'm about to be 30. I'm turning 30 in March 2021, and I can't wait. I'm a whole ass fiance and big brother, big cousin, son, nephew, mentor, all of that. It's a pleasure to be doing this and talking with you, Leah, about it. We've known each other for quite some time from Tupelo as well. I have not lived in Tupelo for a while. I've lived in Montgomery, Alabama. I've lived in New Orleans. Right now I'm living in Mobile, Alabama. My journey is one that's been pretty satisfying and fulfilling. I graduated from Ole Miss, University of Alabama, Tulane. Each of those experiences were different. I love New Orleans, love New Orleans culture. What's out, baby? All of that. I'm here for all of that. What else? I'm a social worker. So that means that I'm involved in working with people and advocating for people who are oppressed or marginalized. I believe in amplifying Black voices, particularly the voices of Black women. So it's intentional that Leah and I are talking, and it's intentional that Leah has her voice and is going to use her voice to talk about some of these causes and some of these missions and issues and things that are going on. And it's also time to let loose and reflect. Leah and I have a personal relationship. We talk about things that we may not talk about on the podcast, but it's a good way to let everyone hear from us in a different format. You may hear a lot. There's a part of this podcast where we'll be talking about different causes and things that motivate us. You may hear me talk a lot about incarceration in the justice system. I'm a forensic social worker. When I was in Montgomery, I worked a lot with people who were indicted by the government. So these may have been death penalty clients. These may have been people who were charged with various crimes and offenses. So you might hear me get into that. Yeah, love music. You'll hear me randomly drop bars and everything. We've already talked about Mr. Alcina and his entanglement. So, you know, this is going to be a fun ride. It'll be a good ride. So, yeah.
I'm excited.
That is me. What you want to jump into first? I have some things. This isn't entirely unscripted, but I have a couple of questions. Part of these questions come from being like wine tipsy. So
I guess one thing to mention, Curtis and I both love wine. We drink. that is a part of our aesthetic as people.
I'm drinking. Yo, I had this crazy thing that I used to do when I was at home. I lived in it might have been the exchange back then, but it was like the apartments where they're like four bedrooms and you have your own lease for your room. And I had this one roommate, Black dude, but he was pledging Sigma Chi. He kept a bottle of Everclear and Taka in the refrigerator, in the freezer. And every now and then I would just get some gumption and grab a little shot. It was a mistake. Anyway, it is now more refined. And if you are going to drink some whiskey, I encourage you to drink Uncle Nearest whiskey. That is an endorsement. So,
whiskey's your thing. Whiskey is like your thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to chill though, because like it's so much sugar and I need to be able to fit this like wedding tux. So bad body out here, you know? So yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, yo, I'm thinking this happened. I was thinking about this. What would your spirit animal be?
Ooh. What's like a boss, like female animal, you know, where like the female of the species is just really, really dominating, but like has dignity and grace, if that makes any sense?
Probably a lioness.
Yeah, because they do all the work.
they hold it down for sure.
They do all the work.
They hold it down.
He'll probably be a lioness.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Would he be Nala?
I don't know if I would be Nala.
Like the OG version of Nala or Beyonce Nala?
I think I like the OG version of Nala. No disrespect to Beyonce at all. because you have to be careful about how you talk about Beyonce. No disrespect to Beyonce, but I think it would be the OG Nala. The OG Nala was just very like wisdom and grace and dignity, but she did all the work. So
podcast and we'll get comments from Beehive. He said something funny about me. I don't like that.
No disrespect to Beyonce. Beyonce is the queen, but I would be the OG Nala.
I think I'd be a bear.
You would be a bear.
Be a grizzly bear.
You would be a bear.
And in business, eating salmon, eating berries. I already do that now.
So. You would be a bear. Up in the woods.
Yeah.
Secluded.
Most definitely.
Not bothering people.
Exactly. You would be a bear. Exactly. What have you been listening to?
I've still been listening to Big Crit. I mean that man, his like lyrical abilities, his writing abilities, his music, it's just genius. Like it's just genius. And I listened to some of his old stuff and some of his new stuff. Like he has just evolved so much, but like each phase was so cool. Like there's never just like a bad like, oh, that's horrible rap, you know. And he's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
And he cares about Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been really interested in like Mississippi lately. I think because the whole pandemic just brought into a different type of perspective and focus for me. And I realized that I really love the South. Yeah. I always used to say I want to go live in a big city somewhere else. but I really love the South and just I love Black people in the South. And so I just think that, you know, we need to be elevating those voices more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just when you really start digging into it, you see just like the rich history and like really just amazing people who come from Mississippi, especially, but definitely from the South. Just the writers and the rappers and the musicians.
Yeah, a bunch of Mississippi rappers, I think, to shout out to Crit, Ray Shrimmer. I grew up thinking that Afro Man was from Mississippi, but he's not, but I'm an idiot. Rick Ross is from Clarksdale. His family's from Clarksdale.
There we go. See?
Yeah,
so. There we go.
I've been listening to hardcore like New York rap, this group called Griselda, and then I'll switch it up and listen to like R&B. I love Genuine, so there'll be like plenty of Genuine that I listen to. So I'm all over the place right now. Yeah. I'm all over the place, but anyway, I do want to ask you because part of this is about wellness. How have you been taking care of yourself during? We'll talk about the pandemic here in a second, but how have you been taking care of yourself during the recent resurgence or activity in the Black Lives Matter movement? And for context, for people out there, Leah has been very, very, very active in Mississippi, especially North Mississippi, as it relates to relocating these Confederate statues and these iconic marks and everything. So she's been out there. She's been in the trenches. So how have you been taking care of yourself?
I think, so like when all of this first happened, I didn't feel like I was doing enough. And I just, you know, I was trying to figure out like, what could I do? I'm back in Tupelo. So like, what can I do to help Tupelo? And you know, how can I like build consensus and like coalition in a place where like activism is rarely seen or heard, and where like, you know, white people are not used to Black people advocating for themselves. So, you know, I really had to wrestle with like, you know, just because I'm not out leading something or out advocating for something, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not engaged. Because I did a lot of service while at the university. I worked on that statue. I worked on fighting the institutional systems within the university of like transparency of leadership, of, you know, the Greek system, And how that's so damaging to Black students a lot. So, you know, I did a lot, but I like to say that after I left college, I was going to be retired, and I'm not. But I'm definitely trying to figure out where to like direct my energy and where to like put my resources and my time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I helped the current students, and tried to help give them strategy and worked along with some other alum to try to guide them in the right direction. And then in the last few weeks, I just realized that, you know, like the university in of itself, even though it's been so, it's given me a lot of beautiful experiences and a lot of just positive experiences. And I know that I wouldn't be where I am today if I had gone somewhere else, but I do realize that like, it's also had a lot of toxicity for me. Mm-hmm. It hasn't always treated me the best. So like, I just wanted to take a break. So now I've been focusing on Tupelo, and it feels so much better to work from home, to like change home. Other than that, lots of wine, honestly, just lots of wine. And, you know, I know like when to unplug and when not to. I haven't, you know, I've been trying to like not focus on everything that's in the news, not focus on the whole cycle. I know lately it's been, because everything is not in the national news, it's been so much easier to engage because it's not like this overload of like information and like what's going on. Yeah. And so I feel like after like the initial shock has worn off of the Black Lives Matter movement, like after all the newness and like the popularity of it has worn off, because, you know, you can only hold like people's attention for so long. And some people, they, you know, they want to be engaged for something and move on. So it's been so much easier to like be intentionally engaged and with people who actually do the work, not these like newcomers.
Yeah. It's, I think it's interesting too, especially for you and for a lot of other people across the country, because you really haven't been able to enjoy like these milestones. Like you graduated and then got right to work in a different get out there and you're arguing with people and people are hitting you with All Lives Matter and, you know, the South will rise again and everything. So
I had this woman come up to me yesterday. We were in front of the Board of Supervisors building, and it was just a few of us protesting. We were just holding signs. We were being very peaceful, honestly, pretty quiet. We weren't trying to be loud and cause a ruckus for that particular event. And this woman came up to me and told me that, you know, people do not care about slavery enough. There's not an outcry about, you know, slavery that's still going on and sex trafficking and, you know, she wanted to know if I was a Christian and if, you know, if I was a believer, like I would be her sister. And it was some old white woman. And I knew that she cared about the statue enough for it to stay. And I knew she knew who I was and wanted to antagonize me. And I just had to tell her, you know, like, I'm not going to agree to disagree with you because, you know, it is about race. The statue does matter. You know, please leave me alone, essentially. But, you know, I think it's, and that's another way, like, I'm not engaging with people. I don't argue with people in Facebook comments for the most part. Like, I don't try to scream at people for them to see my side. And when I stopped doing that, that protected myself so much. It really protected my mental state because I wasn't exhausting myself to argue with folks who don't want to listen.
Yeah, and I'm imagining her trying to, like, argue with you and, like, shift your thinking in like 98 degree weather.
I mean, it was, yeah, like why, you know? So, and, you know, and the article came out in our local newspaper, the Daily Journal, and the woman who spoke in front of the Board of Supervisors yesterday was like talking about how people are hollering at, you know, about how slaves were mistreated. And we don't know that. That was just rumors, you know? And like 3 years ago, I would have been hot. I would have, you know, tried to find out, like, who is she? And let me go find her, you know? But now I'm just like, it's okay.
Yeah. What do you, like, tell people who, like, try to combat your mission in that particular cause and who say, you know, they're just statues? Like, why does it matter? Because there are some people across, you know, the racial spectrum who don't really like care about that at all. You know, we know not all skin folk are kin folk. What do you say to people?
You know, I think if they didn't matter, they would have been put up in the first place. Didn't matter. If they didn't matter, people wouldn't be so opposed to, you know, taking them down or relocating them. There wouldn't be laws that were protecting them. So they matter. They absolutely do matter. And you think of now, like, we idolize people who are so important to us in our time. When Senator John Lewis died over the weekend, you know, there was a huge outcry to rename the bridge in Selma after him, or to make a statue of him, you know. So it's like, statues and symbols are definitely important because it reflects the ideals of the time and even of the present, but definitely of the time in which they were put up. And obviously they're noteworthy because that person or that cause was so important enough to create a physical representation that cannot be destroyed easily about them. So, you know, I think, you know, and I think it's a ignorance and like a unwillingness to really accept, you know, the truth and the current reflection and ideals.
And I mean, too, you know, you mentioned that they put up the statues. These are massive statues. Some of them are like insanely big. And what I try to tell people is that, you know, not only should they not have been there, they were never intended to be moved. Like, it's difficult to move them. We're talking about with cranes. And I think on Instagram or in the news, if we see people who have managed to topple them, it doesn't happen like that, I don't think, for the most part. So that just adds to the nuance of these things.
Well, and they're huge. I mean, the one that's on the, you know, UM's campus, it's over 30 feet tall. I want to, you know, it's got, in, you know, like, definitely like layers to it. It's not just a simple base and pedestal with, you know, the statue of like Johnny Reb on top. No, like, it's massive and it's heavy. The one on the Oxford Square, it is vaulted. So there's like a time capsule inside. The one on Lee County Courthouse, there are a lot of different monuments on Lee County Courthouse. So there's a civil rights monument. There's some really important fountain and like angel statue. There's a monument direct, you know, erected in honor of like veterans from like World War One and on. But the Confederate statue is the largest statue. I mean, it's at least over 30 feet tall. And one of my co-organizers, she's an educator as well, and she has just been so helpful. She has a young 9-year-old daughter, and she took her out to the courthouse and had her look at all the monuments. And she asked her, you know, what do you notice? And she said, well, the one with the man on top, which is the Confederate one, it's the biggest. And she also said it was the ugliest. So, you know, like, children, like, they see these things. And even at 9, you know, they don't really talk to their child about politics too often. But, you know, she recognized that, like, that statue being the biggest and, like, that statue symbolized somebody who did something bad. You know, she realized what type of symbol that held. So
for sure. That's crazy. Yeah, for sure. This is completely separate from that. Did you catch Kanye's tweets?
Oh, a friend and I were talking about that last night. I want to ask you, how do you like view Kanye? Because you've been a hip hop fan for like a really, really long time.
Yeah.
How are you viewing Kanye?
I text my mother-in-law, like, he texts Chris, and she was like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Kanye, I have a love-hate relationship with Ye, to be honest with you. He is not one of my like top five hip-hop artists. I wear his shoes. But a lot of what Kanye does, I'm just bothered by it. And I'm a bit older now. Like when I was younger and the way I digested Kanye when I was younger is completely different than how I digest him now. And it was, oh, you know, I didn't graduate, da 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 da, life is hard. It was like developmentally appropriate. But when he sort of shifted and started talking about, you know, like I am a God, and things just sort of became to be a bit more radicalized and more Kanye, I just started digesting it differently. But I was doing that with a lot of other hip hop. Like I listen to NBA Youngboy now, but my cousin who listens to him, you know, is all about everything that Youngboy is talking about. And me, I'm like, man, somebody please get this young man some help. So Ye is, oh my gosh. I'm okay if I don't listen to him all the time. And he's not in my daily rotation.
So you're a social worker. You really could qualify as a, you know, a counselor or a therapist. You deal with a lot of mental health issues. Uh-huh. So, you know, a lot of people feel like Kanye is exhibiting bipolar disorder. He's like mentally unwell.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine read a tweet to me last night about how like what Kanye is doing, like, you know, this is not funny.
Right.
And you know, y'all really don't take black men's mental health seriously. Mm-hmm. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, it's tough with Kanye because everything that he does is commercialized. He's worth a lot of money. He is a business. His literal name is a business, just like Kim Kardashian or Kim Kardashian West is a business. And I think that for him, it's interesting because his identities, I don't think people are able to separate them. He is a black man. He's also a black man who raps. So last night, it was hard to tell whether or not he was having a manic episode or if he was trying to get some attention and publicity for his album. Because he, after everything, he was like, hey, you know, my album is coming. And the way the artists do their rollouts or their pub is so different now. People typically try to either start some controversy or say something salacious, or it's just different now. We're in this Twitter age. So I think that was unfortunate for him. I was talking to Portia about it, and I was like, you know, because the thing is always, oh, well, maybe this person is hacked. I don't think he was hacked. I think that he was saying exactly what was on his mind. And I think that I hope that he is able to get some help. And I also think that he is a person just like other black people and people in general, and particularly black men who are dealing with things in real time. I don't think Kanye has been right, quote unquote, ever since his mother died. And it's understandable. We grieve and bereave in cycles. He's going to grieve his mother's death for the rest of his life. And I think that, you know, that's something that he is always going to be subjected to. And him talking about, you know, I'm who Get Out was based off of was funny to me, but there is definitely some concern there. And I do hope that he is able to get that help, and he may be getting it. It's just that honestly, we live in such a different time. I think that there was no, I got on Facebook when you had to be invited. This is old, like Mark Zuckerberg stuff. And, you know, there was no Twitter, Instagram at that time. But now we just have so much access to people. And I honestly believe that some things we don't need to know. And I think Kanye, he got in that mode where he wanted to tweet and let people know. And it's unfortunate because whether it was an act or whether it was authentic, you worry about it and you wonder what's going on. And I think the last thing I'll say too is that with artists and stars and celebrities in particular, what they do kind of sets the tone or sets the example for other people. And I just wish that we would spend more time, and if he is receiving mental health treatment, to maybe be willing to talk about certain things, because people do mock behavior, whether they're making fun of it or whether they try to repeat it. It's like when Kurt Cobain committed suicide and like two of his fans did it immediately after him. So it's crazy. What you thinking?
I mean, part of it was, I hate when, part of it goes into like the stigma of mental health and mental illness. So, you know, when someone says something crazy or, you know, or Black Trump supporters, you know, people already say, you know, like, they're mentally ill or they're crazy. Yeah. And so for a minute there, I was really wondering, like, is he really saying, is he really manic? But then after I saw, like, some experts were like, no, he's manic. This is manic behavior. I was like, okay. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you want to believe his cry for help, but you also don't want to give, like, attention to some of his, like, really just off-putting actions, because they really affect how other people think and how mm-hmm. other people see. Like, he has such a huge influence, such a huge sphere. Mm-hmm. And so, like, his political influence is, like, people are really worried about how that's going to affect the 2020 election, and it feels like we're all in the Twilight Zone. But, you know, like, we never thought that someone who, like, a rapper, which, not saying the rappers are not intelligent at all, but, like, someone who is a rapper who has expressed views that support white supremacy, that is completely discredited of, like, history, like, we never thought he would be able to have such a national mm-hmm. platform, such a national stage. So it's so interesting. So interesting. And also, you don't know, like, what's true and, like, what's not true.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting and it's divisive and it's confusing. You know, if that was a manic episode, it came off of his campaign speech where he just said a lot of really, really harmful things. And I don't know, like, I have a birth plan set up, so I'm planning to, like, have a child. So I'm thinking about how every action that I do moving forward, I kind of have to think about how that's going to affect, you know, my partner, my family. So these things have repercussions. That's like Will and Jada. It's like, damn, Willow and Jaden out here looking nuts. Like they have to kind of not answer for their parents, but almost answer for them. And I realized too that there's also a problem or an issue with this whole, like, oh, the Kardashian curse, da 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 da. I didn't know that there were certain aspects that were misogynistic. Like, they kind of attribute, like, his behavior to them when it's like, Kanye has to sort of be held accountable for what he's doing. And I didn't know that there was a narrative, but it made sense. So, you know. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm not going to have a Twitter meltdown anytime soon. And I quickly stopped texting my future mother-in-law because she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah. Yeah. What are you missing the most about, what are you missing the most during quarantine and during the pandemic? And, you know, for everybody out there listening, like, I hope that you're safe and healthy, and your family is doing well and your loved ones are doing well. This is crazy. What are you missing the most during this time, during this pandemic? Like, what's the one thing that you did before that you can't wait to get back to?
I miss people. Mm. Like, I really miss, you know, my friends. I miss being able to just, you know, pick up and go and see my friends. I really liked, you know, social interaction and just, you know, being with people and having those, like, you know, those close, like, moments. I miss that the most. Honestly, I don't really miss, like, the crowded spaces and, like, things being shut down. You know, I miss, like, eating inside of a restaurant a lot, you know, just whenever I wanted to. But but it's not enough for me to, like, riot over it. But, yeah, I miss people. I really do. You know, so.
I'm not wearing a mask. I have respiratory issues. Man.
Like, the whole... You know, and when they say, like, history repeats itself, like, history literally repeats itself. Like, people have, like, gone back, and, like, in the 1920s, like, when the Spanish flu pandemic happened, like,
yeah,
it was the same thing. And so, you know, honestly, sometimes I wonder, like, are these people the descendants of those people who, you know, the anti-maskers back in the day? Or, I mean, because it is wild. It is absolutely wild. Which brings up the topic of Karens. Because a lot, you know, it started out as a joke, but now, like, any white woman who's problematic is a Karen. But they're also saying that, like, Karens don't actually describe the perpetual harm that, you know, these entitled women create.
Yeah.
And you're in academia. Yeah. So how do you deal with Karens?
Yeah, before we do that,
I know you work with a lot of white women.
Yeah,
that's all that's in there. Before we do that, I was just thinking about the the video in Florida of the people protesting about gyms opening, and their protest was them exercising outside of, like, the facility. So they were doing, like, squats and shit. Out of the facility. It was nuts to me, man. Yeah, I work with a woman named Karen, actually, and I talk to her pretty often. And she, I was like, yo, one day we were talking, I was like, you know, and this is when, like, right after George Floyd was lynched and the uprising was happening and everybody was scrambling into their, like, performative allyship mode and wanting to have discussions and listening sessions and shit. She and I had sort of talked beforehand because our offices were right across from each other, and granted, this is during the pandemic, so she called me. We're just talking, and I was like, you know, Karen, I don't know if you know, but online, like, people make fun of you and your name, your whiteness. She's like, no, I know, it's a thing, and it's okay. So it's okay, but yeah, higher ed, and much like a lot of other spaces in the country, it's fueled with whiteness, and it's fueled with, like, old white men. Social work in particular is interesting because there are a lot of old white men who, they've done some practice and been in the field, but they quickly transition to research. And it's like people who will do research and then leave communities and just continue to, like, live in this white, this ivory tower. So it's a struggle. It's a daily struggle dealing with them and fooling with them. And I'm mindful of how people don't know about the construct of race or know about racism. And I told them too, we had a listening session or a meeting, and I told them that I'm mindful of who I am and what I look like. Not only am I a black man, I'm a dark-skinned black man. I weigh like 230. I got a beard, so I'm not this cuddly person. I know that even though they don't realize it, colorism is a real thing, and them being colorists a real thing. So it's a struggle, honestly. But it's also about making sure that when I'm doing the work, I keep students in mind, because higher ed and the academy, they have a nasty habit of sort of pushing to other people and making students responsible for things when it's like, this is on us to clean up. Y'all just make sure you get your lesson. Yeah, this is rough. It's rough. And I know that you've seen things and you saw things at UM sort of similar to that. And you talked to a lot of professors too. So, you know, it is what it is, my dear.
And I think that's important because a lot of professors, I think, don't realize the power that they hold.
Oh, yeah.
And don't realize the, you know, like, what responsibility they have and, like, the student experience beyond, like, what's in the classroom. You know, like, they have the ability to control what students experience outside the classroom and, like, you know, how their actual, like, student daily life is affected. So I think it's important to really encourage students and take some responsibility as a professor, in addition to, like, some of the other work that you have to do, that hidden tax that you have to do, you know, to really encourage students and make sure spaces are safe for them.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm tenure track too, so I have to play a different game. And a lot of the work that I'm doing right now, it's not valued that much in the academic space that I'm in, to these, like, Karens or to other people, but it's valuable to the students. So we're gonna keep riding. Mm-hmm. It. Wheels fall off. Like, I saw this on Twitter. What's up with this like thing about like quarantine bae? Is in protest bays in action bays. Is this a thing? Is this,
you know, I wish it was a thing for me. But so people, you know, they have their little quarantine things. You know, they've met people at like protests and they've like started dating. Yeah. And I also think like people are attracted to people who are like out front and who are advocating for spaces that is attractive. So, you know, people start, you know, sliding DMs, different things like that. So yeah.
What you doing if a young protest person pulls up on you and your DMs is like, yo.
I don't even know how I would respond to that. Cause you know, for what, like, is this real? Is this like a real, are you really hitting on me right now? Like, I don't know. I don't know how I would respond to that.
I'm here. I got this new Ava DuVernay.
Like, there are a lot of men who are like advocates and like, you know, activists and, you know, woke, you know, quote unquote, even though I kind of hate that term. But they're just horrible to their partners. They're really trash. And so that's something that, like, you know, you just have to kind of consider, like, okay, you may be cool in front of the camera, but like, are you really going to be cool off the camera and off, you know, when you're not writing or, you know, being an activist. So, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. For the people who find it that work, you know, good luck. Good luck to you. I wish you all the best.
Yeah. I see these guys and I know that their intentions are well, but I always cringe when they'll be talking about women and be like, yeah, but you know, females, da 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 da. I'm like, man.
Oh my God.
Female what? Oh,
the term.
Female rabbit, female. Talking about, bro. So, we should do that next episode for sure because I'm out of the game, but I want to hear how things are going and what the vibe is.
I think also you could talk about when you were in the game and the perspective that you had.
Hell yeah, I have to talk about it for sure. Yeah. Anyway, so we've reached this segment in the podcast, and this is the impetus or theme for the show where we pause from all this other stuff that we're talking about, and we advocate for a cause that is important to us. So we are pausing for the cause to bring your attention to something that you should be paying, that we feel you should be paying attention to, or something that should motivate you. So, Neil, what's your pause for the cause for episode one?
You know, we did talk a lot about the statues and what's happening in Portland right now and how Trump talked, you know, those secret police and how Trump indicated, you know, that this is coming against people who, you know, protest monuments and all the protection that he put in for monuments and like Confederate iconography. So I definitely think it's something to be paying attention to because it's wild and it's literally like it's happening in like real time, but it's also so distant from us down here in the South, but also it could definitely happen. So I think that's something we should pause for.
Sure. That's a good one. I am pausing for the cause that is Black mental health, for the cause that is fostering resiliency, and for the cause that is pushing back against, I guess we can call it cultural toxicity. So I saw this tweet from this guy. It's tweets by Bilal, B-I-L-A-L, and he said, stop commending people for being resilient. Instead, redesign these systems that inherently make people suffer. I'm having a lot of conversations with family and with friends, particularly my Black, you know, Black family and Black friends. And there seems to be this culture of acceptance around suffering. Like you got to go through something difficult in order to deem yourself worthy. And I'm seeing a lot with a lot of my friends, older and younger, who are in relationships and who are in marriages, who are putting up with a lot of shit and who are living through a lot of things that I don't think that they should be living with, but they're going along to get along. And you know, my pause for the cause is for us to give ourselves some grace and to consider what resiliency looks like and what peace looks like and how it's something that we deserve as opposed to something that we have to earn. So that is mine.
Cool.
So that concludes episode one. How you feeling?
Oh, I feel good. This is cool. We're going to keep this going.
You have any shout outs or anything?
I'm going to give a shout out to some Black creatives. Nakia Jordan, who is a young Black artist from Mississippi. Tyler Carter, who is doing the Sit My Thoughts podcast, and he's really focusing on Black women right now. Mm-hmm. Jay Monda Roy, she is a young Black creative in Mississippi as well. So they all are doing just great things, you know, focusing on Black people, Black art, and Black love. So shout out to them.
Yeah. I have two shout outs. Shout out to your parents and shout out to all of the 2020 graduates. Y'all weren't able to get your cake at all. Shout out to y'all. And shout out especially to the Black graduates who graduated, quote unquote, and who immediately had to try to get into this pandemic workforce, who are applying for grad school, law school, all the different schools. That's a grind. Mm-hmm. I see you and I commend you for that. So where can they find you on social media if you want to give that out?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter and Instagram. My Instagram's private. I toy with it being on private and public. So you have more, you probably find me more on Twitter. Love Twitter. It's Black White Keys, and it's Black WITE and Keys with a Z at the end. So.
I'm on Twitter, but I only use it for news. NEWS. That sounds like I said nudes, but it's, I only use it for the news.
And I was like, Portia's going to come get me. I'm so bad.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. My account is locked, but just hit me up and we'll go. Magnolia Kurt, one word, no spaces. And there you go. Cool. You good?
Yeah.
Peace and blessings to those on the sound of my voice. You just finished episode one of the Pause for the Cause podcast. That was Spirit Animals and Quarantines. Hit us up on Instagram. Or if you have any questions or comments, send us an email at pforthec@gmail.com. Peace.